Today on Annenberg Radio News.
There's this whole area of research called resilience and how communities bounce back.
Terrorism response experts explain what to expect after the Boston bombings. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Tuesday, April 16th, 2013. I'm Graham Clark. This morning, President Obama spoke for the second time in response to the bomb blasts in Boston. He called yesterday's bombing an act of terrorism for the first time.
Anytime bombs are used to target innocent civilians, it is an act of terror. What we don't yet know, however, is who carried out this attack or why, whether it was planned and executed by a terrorist organization, foreign or domestic, or was the act of a malevolent individual.
The blasts killed three people, including an eight-year-old boy. It left more than 170 injured. The two bombs that exploded in Boston are weighing on the minds of many Angelenos. Faith Miller went out into the city to hear what the police are doing and how residents feel about it.
LAPD Chief Charlie Beck is responding to the bombings in Boston with a call to the public.
In an instance like this, when crowds are the target, you're going to know before we do. And we need that knowledge to keep you safe. If you see something, say something.
That's the phrase the chief said the most this morning at the police commissioner's meeting. He said his police department will also send out more patrol officers. They'll respond like they always do after terrorist attacks.
Nothing in this response is different from other responses when there have been incidents or the terror threat level has become raised. You know, unfortunately, this is the new normal.
Other groups are also heightening security in L.A. At the airport, Police Chief Patrick Gannon says they're concerned, but they have not called off any flights.
Well, you know, currently at LAX, out of an abundance of caution, you know, we're making sure that we have high visibility to assure the traveling public that their safety is our number one concern and priority.
The Long Beach Police Department will also address security issues this afternoon for its upcoming Grand Prix weekend. The Los Angeles Times Festival of Books is expected to draw a crowd this weekend, and USC's Department of Public Safety is also upping security. Captain David Carlisle says they've asked for an on-call bomb-sniffing dog and more LAPD officers to help out with the festival. And as for the students, Junior Brett Fromson says he won't let what happened in Boston keep him from going to the festival.
I'm not going to live in fear. That's just going to give these people what they want. They can't scare us.
Fifth-year senior Jonathan Kelly says fear wouldn't help much anyway.
It's going to be the kind of thing that you're going to want to watch out for, but there's not much you can do about it.
Except call LAPD if you see something suspicious. The number is 877-A-THREAT. Faith Miller, Annenberg Radio News.
A bipartisan group of eight senators is preparing to introduce an immigration reform measure to address the growing issue of immigration in the U.S. Meanwhile, thousands of U.S. immigrants and their families gathered today to welcome in the newest group of U.S. citizens. Reporter Nick Berman was at the L.A. Convention Center for the U.S. citizenship ceremony.
Place your right hand over your heart and repeat after me. I pledge allegiance to the flag.
Today was a special day for the 5,000 immigrants who took their oaths and celebrated the last step in becoming an American citizen. It was especially emotional for Selena Ewing, the widow of a U.S. Army soldier who died in 2007. She fought back tears as she described what today meant to her.
My parents and myself moved here when I was only 12 years old. So really, this is all I know. You know, this is my country. And so I'm just glad that it's happening.
Like many of the other newly naturalized citizens, Ewing says she is relieved to be done with the process. While this group of immigrants can forget about the immigration process, there are still millions of immigrants living in the U.S. illegally who cannot. This week, Congress is set to hear the first measure to reform immigration laws since 2007. The bill is likely to include an established path to citizenship, additional border control funding, and changes in visa programs for highly skilled workers, guest workers, and family visas. Florida Senator Marco Rubio is one of the key senators involved with the bill. He has answers to the bill's opponents, who say it rewards those here illegally by giving them a better chance to become a citizen.
Well, first of all, I think it's important to understand it doesn't give anything. It allows people access to the legal immigration system. Number two, some people won't qualify. They haven't been here long enough. They've committed very serious crimes. They won't be able to stay. Number three is all people will get is the opportunity to apply for things, to apply for a legal status, which isn't awarded on day one. I mean, there's a process for that.
A process that Selena Ewing waited 7 years to complete. Ewing came to the U.S. at the age of 12, but says now she can finally call herself an American.
It means the world, you know. This is what I've always wanted. I don't know how to explain it. It's just, you kind of feel whole. Like, I feel like I belong.
The immigration bill is expected to be filed later this week and could change the process immigrants go through to call themselves Americans. Nick Berman, Annenberg Radio News.
A woman who works for a gourmet popcorn company in El Segundo kept a company executive hostage at gunpoint this morning. The hostage situation lasted over 3 hours. The El Segundo police say the suspect has been taken into custody. The executive of Popcornopolypse was released unharmed and no injuries have been reported. Hundreds of union and county workers descended on the steps of the L.A. County Board of Supervisors building today. They are frustrated over years of salary pay freezes. And as Denise Guerra reports, they hope the supervisor will address the issue as part of the county's proposed 2013-2014 budget.
Turn the corner toward the massive marble-clad L.A. County Board of Supervisors building on 500 West Temple Street, and you will see an overflowing mass of purple shirts and yellow flags.
For the race, stand up! It's time! Say it again!
All this collective energy is in response to County CEO William Fujioka's budget recommendations for the fiscal year. Though salary negotiations are not part of today's meeting, members like Marlene Allen from the Service Employees International Union want salaries to be part of the conversation.
We haven't had a raise in 4 years, and the cost of living has gone up, the cost of goods and services, groceries, tuition for children has gone up, and we've sacrificed, we've given back. In our retirement, we rolled over our contract, so it's time for us to get a raise.
We are gonna turn it up.
We are gonna turn it up.
Say more jobs.
More jobs.
Better pay.
Better pay.
Stormy County.
Another reason for today's huge turnout is because of Bring Your Child to Work Day. Marcos Alvarez has worked at the county for 23 years and brought his children to today's rally.
I had an argument with the principal today. I said, what better lesson can you teach your children to let them know that you don't take anything for granted, that you gotta fight for what's right. This was a trip worth coming to. Am I right?
Los Angeles County spokesman David Summer said today's rally was not a surprise.
It is a fairly routine effort by our union partners to talk about the issues that are important to them, but our Board of Supervisors is very much aware that all employees have gone 5 years without raises, and this is a starting point discussion.
After 4 years of budget deficits, pay freezes are one of the measures used to balance the city's budget. Salary negotiations with county workers will not be settled until later this year. Denise Guerra, Annenberg Radio News.
It's a bad day to fly American Airlines. The airline's computerized reservation system had some major technical difficulties, resulting in delayed flights and long lines in airports across the country. American grounded flights until 2 p.m. Systems are running again, but the airline is still behind schedule, making up for this morning's delays. The California Science Center hosted the 42nd annual State Fair today. As Emily Mattu reports, students proved just how talented their generation of young scientists are.
American writer Pearl Buck once said, "The young do not know enough to be prudent. They attempt the impossible and achieve it, generation after generation." Today, more than 1,000 students tried to explain the impossible through science at the 42nd Annual State Science Fair in Exposition Park. These students range from 6th to 12th grade and traveled from all over the state to be there. Their projects were truly original. They had tested everything from reducing bacteria in lakes to the effects of petroleum on society.
These kids are just so amazing. Every year, it drives you crazy how really good they are and how inspiring.
That's Alan Fru. He's been the chair of the California State Science Fair for the past 6 years.
Did you take geometry?
Rows and rows of excited students stood beside their projects with pride. Their projects fit into the museum's actual exhibits seamlessly. As I walked amongst them, they would stand up straighter and smile politely. I think they thought I was a judge. Tally Clapp, an energetic seventh grade girl, was eager to tell me about her project.
I tested the effects of various coffee bean roasts to the heart rate and longevity of Daphnia magna, which is an aquatic organism commonly known as the water flea.
Yeah, so she lost me. But that's just a glimpse into how smart these kids are. In layman's terms, Tally tested the effects of coffee to see if a specific blend can increase the length of your life.
What I concluded is that the light roasted coffee was beneficial for longevity, and I believe with more studies by scientists, this could potentially help humans.
Last month, Congress completed its work on the 2013 spending bill that laid out the budgets for science organizations like the National Science Foundation and NASA. But other research agencies, like the National Institute of Health, continues to feel the effects of a 5.1% spending cut.
What happens is that these kids don't get a chance to do hands-on science. It's damaging to the country overall.
The STEM initiative, which stands for Science, Technology, Engineering, and Math, works to encourage education and funding in these fields through legislative action.
This whole STEM initiative is very, very important to the country because that's where you get the innovation and creativity, and you drive the things that we see every day.
And it's at fairs like this that kids are questioning and exploring topics that do indeed drive the things that we see every day. Randy Kmet, a ninth grade boy, tested the effects of altruism on your self-esteem. He wants to go into another sector that desperately needs a science advocate.
I feel I'm more suited to politics. I can fund the sciences there.
Maybe Congress should have taken a field trip to the fair today to gain some perspective into exactly what is on the chopping block. Emily Mattu, Annenberg Radio News.
First through fourth place winners will receive their awards during a ceremony later tonight. Today's chilly weather won't be around too long. It should be sunny and in the high 70s by the end of the week. And later on Annenberg Radio News, we hear about some alternatives to a weekend at Coachella. Major League Baseball is celebrating the memory of Jackie Robinson this week. Baseball players nationwide donned the jersey of legendary number 42 yesterday. Evan Budrovich reports on how Robinson's legacy and changing race relations in the sport.
Dodgers center fielder Matt Kemp is an African-American baseball player who credits Jackie Robinson for his rise to stardom.
You get all the same amount of blessings as you would playing basketball or football than you do in baseball. So baseball is a great sport and it's brought me to a lot of places.
While the baseball community relishes Robinson's achievement, the sport is slowly scaring away the next generation built upon instant gratification. USC sports media professor Dan Durbin explains why future pioneers are not latching on to America's pastime.
Baseball is simply boring. It is a boring sport today, and younger generations in the United States in particular aren't as interested in it as they weren't once were.
66 years after Robinson crossed baseball's color barrier, African Americans comprise only 7% of players in the majors, a 12% decline from its height in 1986. Baseball is gradually playing second fiddle to more up-tempo sports like basketball and football. Matt Kemp broke that mold, choosing to play baseball over collegiate basketball coming out of high school.
As me, I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you about baseball and the Dodgers if it wasn't for Jackie Robinson. So we always appreciate Jackie and what he's done for us.
Robinson began his playing days in his hometown of Pasadena. And now, local programs in Southern California are trying to bring excitement back to the game. The Urban Youth Academy in Compton develops kids' skills on and off the field. Director Daryl Miller says baseball combined with education can pave a strong path for success.
Our goal is to make sure every single person that we touch, every single young person we touch, graduates from high school. Our goal is to make sure that you have a chance, to make sure baseball and life works for you. and for this community.
Major League Baseball recently enacted a diversity task force to find out why these growing number of African-American players are leaving the sport. Professor Durbin says the league's efforts will uncover a concerning trend.
Major League Baseball still largely is run by a very conservative and very white and very middle-aged to older group of people. Fans for Major League Baseball are progressively getting older and older and less diverse.
Robinson was an honorable man who suffered years of hardship, opening doors for future generation of athletes. His daughter, Sharon Robinson, believes her father would not be overly concerned with the fading number of African-American players in baseball.
I think he would be very concerned that our black kids are not graduating from high school or they're not going to college. And that would be more of a concern to him.
In the spirit of Jackie Robinson Day, the LA Sports Museum opened a private exhibit showcasing memorabilia from his baseball career. The museum is enjoyable for fans of all ages, located in South LA at Main Street and Washington. Evan Budrovich, Annenberg Radio News.
In May, Los Angeles voters will be asked to decide three measures aimed at regulating medical marijuana dispensaries in the city. City Councilman Bill Rosendahl and Paul Koritz are backing one of them, known as Proposition D. As Cliff Liu reports, they spoke in support of the proposal today outside City Hall.
Why are we here? Prop D! And why do we support D?
Proposition D would shut down over 90% of the city's marijuana dispensaries and put new regulations on the industry and tax sales of the drug. Councilman Bill Rosendahl himself uses medical marijuana to treat his cancer.
But I can tell you from a health standpoint, I would not be alive, I would not be standing here right now if it wasn't for the medicinal use of marijuana. D means life.
The bill will only allow the 135 dispensaries that opened before 2007 to remain in business. There are currently more than 1,400 dispensaries in LA. Councilman Paul Koretz says these regulations will make communities safer.
Because we didn't have a Prop D, many localities have had a plethora of under-regulated, non-law-abiding dispensaries operating without the necessary safety measures that, when in place, will protect the surrounding neighborhood.
But not everyone agrees that Prop D is the right way forward. Another measure on the ballot, Prop F, takes a different approach. Prop F will not limit the number of dispensaries in the city. It would also allow dispensaries to remain open for 2 hours longer than Prop D will. Some legislators, like Councilman Bernard Parks, are opposed to any steps that loosen marijuana laws. Parks believes that none of these bills should pass. Here's his press secretary, Brittany Marin.
His main argument against all three is the fact that under federal law and under California state law, medical marijuana is illegal. It's illegal to sell, it's illegal to buy, it's illegal to grow. Therefore, we shouldn't have power to be able to tax and regulate an illegal substance.
On May 21st, voters will decide how the city will treat its pot shops. Cliff Liu, Annenberg Radio News.
24 hours later, we still don't know much about the bombing at the Boston Marathon. But a few things are clear. For one, the way that the public reacts to acts of terrorism. Amid confusion and fear, people work together to make things right. I spoke with two experts on just what happens after incidents of intense violence.
My name is Heather Rosoff. I am a research assistant professor through the Price School of Public Policy, and I'm also a researcher at the CREATE Center, which is the Center for Risk and Economic Analysis of Terrorism Events.
How would you describe your field of study as it pertains to what happened yesterday?
We conduct surveys where we're looking at public reactions to events, their fear levels, their behavior over the coming days and weeks, and kind of some of the longer-term implications.
I would love to know more about your interpretation and about what this means as far as how people react to events like this, sort of the public at large.
There's a terrible event, and there's the emergency response. That's when you're talking about FBI officials and police investigating what occurred, medical officials treating the injured and impacted.
Right.
Then there's public response. Public response is extremely powerful. What's interesting about that is the role of social media. The level of uncertainty is really high, so people are very nervous. And then the way that information is provided to us
is very piecemeal. People are experiencing high levels of anxiety, and this affects their behavior. I spoke with some friends today who aren't even in Boston, who kept their kids at home just because it made them feel better. That's kind of what they say terrorists want. They want to have a psychological impact. How people perceive the event and how they respond to it affects the day-to-day lives of individuals, but also local communities, economies. What if people stop going to work because they're scared that there might be an explosive down the street? Well, it's terrible that three people lost their lives. That is not very many, and I'm not trying to belittle it. But
of course not.
And just for context, 35 people are killed by guns every day.
You've spent a whole career, and you will continue to study the sort of phenomenon by which we deal with these things. But is there any one piece of information that helps you?
I think it's just time, and I think information. People's perceptions will shift once they know the cause of what occurred, and that will affect how long their perceptions of risk will remain elevated. There's this whole area of research called resilience, and it's how communities bounce back. Kind of got people pulling together across the country in different states and cities, saying these are activities that you need to carry out, and let's show any adversary that we're a resilient, powerful country, and this isn't going to phase us. I think that's very effective for managing public response to events like this.
You're Heather Rosoff, and you're a research professor, among other things. Providing information is key, so I'm really glad that we could hear from you and hear your insight.
Thank you.
I also spoke with Val Vincent Reyes, who has experience on the ground as a first responder.
My name is Val Vincent Reyes. I'm a licensed clinical social worker, retired United States Army social work officer, Operation Enduring Freedom combat veteran. I was the social work officer in charge of the disaster mental health debriefing services.
So I'll ask you my big question up front. What is important to do going forward?
Just offer random acts of kindness to the first line responders, to the survivors, whether it be offering food, clothing, or shelter, or a good listening ear, and to listen to their stories and provide them the opportunity to talk stories, and then afterward provide them with a sense of hope that, yes, it was a tragedy that you survived, but tomorrow and the future will be a little bit better for you with help and support. Go and make them aware that we as an American citizen really care about circling the wagons and want to reach out and help them get back on their feet.
Val Vincent Reyes, disaster mental health service provider and Afghanistan war veteran.
Licensed clinical social worker.
Licensed clinical social worker. Thanks so much for your time.
Okay, thanks.
And your work. Now we check in with Ashley Regal to see what's coming up on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision.
Thanks so much. Tonight on ATVN, we spoke with a Boston Marathon runner who was minutes away from the finish line when the explosions occurred. And the Compton mayoral election began today. We spoke with voters about the changes they want to see. More at 6.
Thank you, Ashley. If you've ever had a burning question for comedian Seth Meyers, tonight might be your night. The Saturday Night Live star will speak to USC students in a short question and answer session at Bovard Auditorium at 8 p.m. And that's it for this Tuesday. Look online for our story about Coachella alternatives. We had help today from ATVN and Sam Weiser. Kat Boza produces the arts and culture segment, and Catherine Davis is the newscast producer. Our executive producer is Aaron Schrank, and for all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Graham Clark.